Well, girl, there was your first red flag. Like, yes. Ditch this loser. Welcome to Lawyers Behaving Badly. I'm Karen Delaney.
And I am Jennifer Judge. We are back. And I feel like I have not talked to you in ages, even though we just recently had lunch and text every single day, all day long. But
well, I was going to say, we're back, asterisk. We're back for now. We're back for this episode.
Yes.
But as we will discuss, I don't know when we'll be doing another episode, maybe in June.
Yeah.
So we're back for this one.
We're back for this one. We will be back for the long term. We're not going away. We just have life intervening, which was the number one topic.
Yeah. No, the deal is my husband and I are consciously decoupling from the state of Texas. And we are moving our family like all the way across the country. And that is happening in like 6 weeks. So I am also trying to stay gainfully employed and run my business and be a good mom and partner and friend. And so there was something that had to give, and it was the podcast talking shit about other lawyers.
It's the free thing is the one that got dropped real fast.
The money pit is what we cut back on.
Yeah, I don't envy your life right now, having had moved enough in my life to never want to do it again. And mine was just across town. I can't even imagine.
The moving part is actually going to be okay, because we are fortunate enough that there's a lot you can resolve with moving by simply throwing money at that problem. On the issue of selling a house, however, if we have anybody who's considering selling a house, my very learned advice at this point is to just die instead, because
that's easier. If there's a way to burn it down without getting caught, look at that option.
It's easier to just die and make it somebody else's problem, because this has been awful. And we have a 2018 house. Like, our house is not even 10 years old. It's not even close to 10 years old.
Yeah, the things that I can't even imagine with two kids at the end of a school year dealing with all of that. Hat's off to you.
We're under contract, and our buyers seem like they are incredibly nice, young family, first time home buyers with maybe not the most experienced agent. And so we're getting some really wackadoodle requests. And I think it's going to be okay. We're addressing them as appropriately and patiently as we can. And I mean, this is a great house. It's a great house. Mm-hmm. And I think they would love it. We just, you know, got to get past some of this other stuff instead. But like I said, just don't sell your house. Just die.
That's your tip from us for today.
Yeah, my hot tip. My hot tip after having done this. And I wanted to talk to you. We were both in the zone of totality for the eclipse earlier this week. And you do a lot of astral photography when you get the opportunity to go somewhere, dark skies. Thoughts on the solar eclipse?
Leading up to the solar eclipse, I thought it was going to be cool, but I also thought it was like pretty overhyped at that point. And I did not think it could ever live up to the constant media attention on it. And I am happy to say that I was so very, very wrong. I thought it was unbelievably moving and awesome, and like awesome in a way that is awe-inspiring and incredible. It was one of those things where we were in our backyard. We had a lot of people in the neighborhood in like the park that's directly behind our backyard. I could hear all my neighbors out in their backyard. And when totality hit, you just heard people exclaim things without even realizing that they were exclaiming. They were like, "That's so cool," or "Oh my God," or, you know, it was like the shared human experience of awe-inspiring, "Oh my God, that's so cool." That was very moving for me. Like, I got emotional looking at it. It was, I'm so glad that we saw it, and I could see how someone could become a solar eclipse follower, you know, totality follower, because it would be my sister and I last night on the phone were like, well, it's going to be in Iceland in 2025 and you're supposed to be able to see the Northern Lights when totality hits. And wouldn't that be amazing? And like, practically, we can't do that for various reasons of things going on in 2025. But we were like, that would be amazing. I could see how someone could get caught up in that. And I know you even had your son out of school on Monday to spend time and watch the eclipse. So how was it for you?
Both my kids. And I guess I didn't really understand what totality meant until a couple of weeks ago when I stumbled across some random TikTok videos that really explained how dark it gets, how during totality you can look at the sun. I mean, to quote my youngest, it looks like a black hole swallowed up the sun and you can see the corona of the sun around the moon. And you can actually look at it, but it gets dark, it gets quiet, the insects get quiet, it looks like sunset everywhere around the horizon. And I had already ordered us a bunch of eclipse glasses, and I sort of had in my mind that I would keep the kids home from school that day and we'd, I don't know, go have, there's this giant hill in our neighborhood. We'd go up the hill and maybe have a picnic and hang out or whatever. And I spent the whole weekend stressing out about this because the forecasts were not looking good for us in terms of cloud cover. And I've already lost so much time for working to dealing with this house shit. We were in a hotel this weekend while our house was on the market for the first weekend. And we just wanted to be, you know, we had so many showings. We were just like, we can't be in the house and like trying to pick up and clean up in between these showings or whatever. So we'll be in the hotel. And based on the forecast, I was like, oh my God, it's going to be cloudy and the kids are going to be home and I'm not going to be able to get any work done. And it's just going to basically be this gigantic waste. And instead, we got just incredibly lucky and skies were completely clear. The weather was perfect. It is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. It was absolutely spectacular. The difference between being in the zone of totality and even at 99% coverage is night and day. There's no comparison. So if anybody's like, oh, I wasn't that impressed by it, blah, 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 they probably were not in the zone of totality. I mean, it is incredible. The sky goes completely dark. We saw Venus.
Yes.
We saw stars.
Isn't that wild?
In the middle of the day,
the stars came out.
The temperature dropped. We noticed that it started getting cooler probably maybe 15 minutes before totality. The temperature dropped by probably a good 15 degrees and it got really
nice. It felt
nice
like
and cool.
Like it was markedly cooler when that hit.
It was incredible. I felt a sense of joy. Like it was like a sense of joy straight to the heart. It was incredible. And my kids haven't stopped talking about it. It really blew their minds too. I just feel incredibly grateful and lucky that not only were we in the zone of totality, but that I was able to experience that with them. And my husband was there. My mom came over. And so we all went up on this hill where you can see, you don't really have a 365 degree view of the horizon, but it's, you can see a pretty good chunk of horizon in our city and the lake that's nearby. And so it was, I mean, it was amazing. It was incredible. And I told my husband, I think I'm an eclipse chaser now. I was like, hey, we like Spain. There's going to be one over Spain in the next couple of years. And he was like, girl, no, we're not going to Spain for the eclipse. And I'm like, well, speak for yourself.
Yeah, I'll be gone that weekend then.
Right. Put it on the calendar that I'll be in Europe and I guess you and the kids can hang back. So that was amazing.
Yeah, it was. It was just like you said, it was, you can't explain it until you experience it. Like there are not words that do it justice, how cool it was. And my kids stayed in school because their school had a big programming set for it. One's in fourth grade and one's in sixth grade. And so their two schools had like, and they were outside, they supplied them glasses, they hung out, and my youngest got home and I asked him how it was. And he was like, it was amazing. It was so cool. We got to see it and take off our glasses during totality. Like he raved about it. And then when my oldest got home, and again, sixth grader, I asked him how it was. And he was like, it was more than mid, which is like raving.
A ringing endorsement.
A ringing endorsement from a sixth grader. So it was wonderful to hear that they enjoyed it as well. And I was, it was one of those things where I'm just happy I saw it. Like you call it a once in a lifetime experience. And obviously it's not if you go and travel to see them, but a once in a lifetime experience to sit in your backyard and have it happen right there was, it's a core memory of mine now. It was amazing.
Well, once in a lifetime for me, because my mom is 80 years old. She's not going to be around for the next totality over North America. She's certainly not going to Europe with me to see another one. And I was thinking to myself last night, I mean, I know there's supposed to be another one over North America in 2045 or 2046. And I was like, I'm really supposed to wait another 20 years to experience something like that? That seems like an unreasonably long time.
Yeah, it's cool. So we can become eclipse chasers together now. It's how we'll hang out in person.
Do you want to go to Spain in a couple of years?
Yeah, like, deal. Let's do it.
Yeah. It's not going over Barcelona, but we can go hit up Barcelona, have some great food, then head north. It'll be incredible.
Yeah, we'll make it a tapas and eclipse trip.
That's right.
Yes. So you spoke about TikTok and how you watch TikTok videos of the eclipse. My next chit-chat topic was going to be about the evolution of our TikTok For You pages and how we discussed that. And this is, I'm sure, partially my fault, but we have both...
For the record, I just pulled my hoodie up over my face. I don't know about this, dude. We may be editing this very heavily.
I wasn't going to throw us too far under the bus.
Well, can I posit something?
Yeah. Yes.
And you'll get into more detail here. I'm going to blame Emily Henry for this, because
that's exactly what I was going to say.
Because I think if we had not been so terribly, terribly disappointed in Happy Place, none of this would have happened.
Yes, I agree completely. It's you got me started on Emily Henry as an author.
She's lovely.
She's lovely. Her books are wonderful. They're like little warm hugs of a book. So they're like delightful and fun and heartwarming. And I love them. And there's like a little bit of romance in them. And so I got onto Book Talk and I was like, what else is like Emily Henry? And then last year, Emily Henry came out with one of her new books. And you and I were both grievously disappointed in that book, both in the message of the book, the ending, the characters, like everything about it was bad. I just disliked every moment of it.
It was such a bummer.
It was a bummer.
Like, absolutely such a bummer. Especially after anticipating it for so long.
Yes. And the ending was telegraphed about halfway through the book. You kind of suspected what the ending was.
1,000%.
And I was angry getting to the ending, knowing what it was going to be. And I was like, it better not fucking be what I think it is. And then it was. And I can't remember, but you and I were rage texting about it.
We really were. No, we were. And listen, I'm just going to do a spoiler alert so we can discuss this more candidly, because we haven't done this on the pod yet. So we are going to talk about the plot and what the ending is. And if you don't want to know what it is, then it is now your responsibility to skip ahead and not listen to this. But basically, the female main character has gone all the way through college and medical school. She is completing her residency as a surgical resident. I think maybe a neurosurgery or something.
It was a pediatric neurosurgeon. Yes.
Okay. And then she, like, her boyfriend's a total asshole and her friends kind of suck. And she breaks up. Well, I guess he's her fiance at some point. They break up. And the resolution of the book is her being like, oh, actually, I don't want to be a doctor. I want to go move to middle of nowhere, Montana, where he's now running a furniture business, making, and granted, it is like handcrafted, bespoke furniture that's very expensive. But A, girl, that is a physical job. What do you think is going to happen when he's 50 and his back hurts, or he's 40 and his back hurts? Okay, so there's that. So she decides she's going to drop out of her residency program to move back to Montana to be with him while he does this furniture thing so she can make pottery.
Yes.
And everybody I know, we're all losing our minds.
Yes.
Because she comes from this very middle-class background. There is a lot in the book that resonates about the way some of us grew up with various things.
Yes.
But she comes from this very middle-class background. And it's like, you have student loans to pay. What do you mean?
I remember we were like, how are you paying your med school student loans with pottery in Montana?
Hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt.
Pottery? We were like, There are doctors in Montana. You didn't have to be a neurosurgeon, but you could go be a pediatrician, maybe, or anything or a GP, else.
Anything. And you somehow go all the way through medical school and residency, surgical residency, and then you're like, God, I don't know. This just isn't for me. I want to throw some pots. What?
And not only that, I don't know. This isn't for me. My boyfriend or fiance didn't love my career. I'll quit it for him and go do this.
Yeah. And that's the other thing is that he's been a shithead the whole time. They go to San Francisco for this residency. And the whole thing is like, he's just this Montana country boy. And he really hates San Francisco. And it's like, well, girl, there was your first red flag. Like, ditch this loser.
He's an anchor to you.
No man is that special. Ditch him.
Yes.
Like, what?
So that is Happy Place, and that's why we hated it, because the ending should not be throwing your career away with your hundreds of thousands of dollars of student loan that
for
you
a man?
Are not gonna be, for a man. For a this man.
For a man? All,
for man.
For this man.
This man. Awful. So we, my TikTok for you page then became shitting on Emily Henry's Happy Place, which then led into the evolution of other books like that. And it has, I mean, we have read some wild stuff in our time. I know you have read Overtake My Heart. Yes.
Well, no, but that was a bit. Yeah. I read that as a bit, but to do with you on the pod, not because I was legitimately interested in it.
But I sent you a book that showed up on my For You page, and it's a novella, and it is a romance novella, and it's something about, it's, the cover is like the chocolate bar and a marshmallow and a graham cracker that are personified and have a love triangle, and it's a 21-page smut novella about the personified
food.
Ingredients of s'mores. And I'm not lying. It's 21 pages. Like, I kind of want to read it to see what it's about.
I think you should read it and deliver a book review on our next podcast. In fact, I feel like we owe it to the fans after having been gone for so long.
I'm going to do it. So I'm going to go find this little novella and I'm going to report back on it. But I sent it to you and recognizing that the fact that it's on my For You page says a lot about me.
We just won't go there. Let's not touch that.
Yeah. And it caused a moment of introspection that my book talk used to be so respectful, and now it's about food that fucks. So. So that was my contribution to our chit chat, is the devolution of my TikTok experience.
No, but I feel like for people who are dating, the ultimate screening tool is to have somebody give you their phone so that you can review their For You page on TikTok, because that will tell you everything you need to know about that person.
And granted, it's all spyware or whatever, and they've gathered information across my phone, not use of TikTok. And I've just given that up and given that to God, because every app does it. I don't care, whatever.
Facebook is doing the same thing. It's just a question of, you know, what state actor is involved.
Yeah, exactly. But they have TikTok more than anything in my life. The For You page has cornered my interests. And so... Yeah, it's a reflection of me. It's also hilarious that our TikToks have merged. Our For You pages are basically the exact same. And often we send each other one and the response is either I almost sent that to you or I just watched that one. So they're right up there.
There's basically nothing that I think is too weird to send to you. And there's been some weird stuff. Food that fucks takes the cake, though.
So I will report back on the s'mores love triangle for our next episode and let everybody know how it goes.
Well, and the TikTok that you sent was so funny, too, because, it literally is about food, right? And so that's crazy and bizarre. But then apparently in this novella, there's a reference to, I think they call them like the big eaters or something.
Yes.
And it's maybe this implication that these foodstuffs, if you will, yes, are having their romantic relationship in a world that also includes humans. Yes. But no world building that signifies like what the relationship is between these sentient food things and humans. Are humans eating food? Like, what is going on here?
I think you're demanding too much of a book about food that fucks. If we're going to go deep enough in the world building experience in that.
Yeah. I guess I just can't be satisfied because on the one hand, I'm pissed at Emily Henry for a very well-developed world in which this woman abandons all her career ambitions to go make some pots in Montana. And neither am I satisfied with the idea of sexy food when the world is not sufficiently developed.
Oh gosh, this has already made my day better.
So I have one more chit-chat item with you, mm-hmm, which is there is crazy drama going on in my HOA that I have to tell you about.
I guess, but people didn't see, like, my eyes lit up and I was like, joy. This is joy.
I am so excited because I don't know any of these people and this doesn't involve mm-hmm me whatsoever.
And you're leaving, so who cares?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, yeah. I don't care. And I've never been interested in being involved with an HOA in the first place. And for those who don't know, number one, I don't think HOAs should exist and they are extremely problematic. You cannot live in my city without mm-hmm being a member of an HOA. Every single neighborhood has an HOA. It's terrible. That's a problem for another day. Anyway, on March 25th at almost 8 o'clock at night, all the HOA members got an email completely out of the blue called Board of Directors Statement on ARC member removals. And that's ARC, A-R-C. It stands for the Architectural mm-hmm Review Committee. Because for those who have the luxury and joy of not having to deal with HOAs, here, if I want to put up a pergola in my backyard, mm-hmm, if I want to put in a pool, if I want to change the landscaping in certain ways, yeah, like installing large trees or whatever, mm-hmm, repainting, that all has to be approved by the Architectural Review Committee, the ARC or the ARC. So we get, and that of course is staffed with members that are appointed by the board of directors of the HOA. So we get this random statement emailed at night on March 25th. And it says that the following board statement was approved for release. The board has been fielding numerous inquiries regarding the removal of three members from the ARC in February, as documented in the official board minutes accessible on the HOA website. Recognizing that board members have been approached individually with inquiries and have been endeavoring to respond, it is imperative to uphold transparency by furnishing an accurate depiction of the events from the board's viewpoint. And they go on to describe how in July of 2023, the board interviewed 14 candidates for 5 open positions. They make appointments to those positions. But then in November, they get complaints about various ARC members not being able to work together, which, by the way, these are random people from the neighborhood. All they're supposed to decide is like yay or nay on this pool. Yes. Like, does it comply with the rules? Is it okay to like use this paint color?
Like, can somebody install differences over their crepe myrtles?
Right. Somebody's like, I hate pecans and I will never allow a pecan tree in this neighborhood. So the statement says that nobody offered to resign at that time. In fact, emails sent to board members on November 9th, Ravine and Gova, who are both newly appointed members, Ravine and Gova both request that the board remove Deborah, another newly appointed member, because, quote, they cannot work with Deb. Oh. So Ravine and Gova are like, we can't work with Deb, get rid of her. The board says a thorough board investigation was conducted, including interviews with all parties involved and additional witnesses. As part of that process, both Ravine and Gova were interviewed at length. The findings highlighted significant challenges in teamwork and communication centered among three specific ARC members, who I think we can assume are Ravine, yeah, Gova, and Deborah. During the board's investigation, several allegations were made, some involving potential biases on the basis of ethnicity and gender.
Oh my gosh.
I know. I read that and I was like, immediately just sparkled with joy because I was literally, like, this is the kind of drama that I love.
My eyes lit up. I was like,
I know. I was like, oh, more. This is actually interesting. This is not just like, you know, Deb doesn't like this particular pool installer. Yeah. This is like, you know, Deb is maybe racist. I mean, we don't know who allegations were about. The board's investigation discovered no substantiating evidence of intentional racism or sexism. I thought that wording was very interesting. Intentional racism or sexism.
Exactly. Because this is written by a lawyer. So
obviously.
This language is very intentional.
But I also was like, a thorough board investigation was conducted. I would love to know more about that, because if there are some people I'm going to trust to conduct a thorough investigation, it's not a bunch of randos from my neighborhood.
Like, yeah, exactly.
So then this statement says the board called a joint meeting of both the board and the ARC. And, you know, everybody's basically like, rah, rah, let's all work collaboratively to address these issues. And this statement says that the board at that time believed it had received assurances that the steps would be taken for improvement. Quote, unfortunately, the situation with the ARC did not improve after that meeting and had, in fact, worsened. Ravine and Gova had refused to even communicate on ARC business with Deborah. This continued behavior and lack of timely participation on ARC submission deliberations and voting of both these members negatively impacted the group dynamics as well as the committee's ability to meet its objectives. So then, earlier this year, apparently, the board or the ARC committee chair recommended to the board that they remove Ravine and Gova from the ARC committee because of, quote, multiple behavioral and performance issues. Ooh. Quote, it was also noted that Deborah had made overt efforts to improve and work together following this like rah-rah meeting that they all had in December. So in February, the board removes Ravine and Gova, but then they remove Deborah too. So, which is kind of like, why did she get removed?
Yeah, she was trying.
I mean, apparently she was trying to remediate the issues, but they just, maybe they're just like, whatever, we need to get rid of everybody.
Yeah.
Okay, so then Ravine and Gova both try to resign, and the board's like, well, you can't resign because we've already removed you. Like, there's nothing to resign from.
You can't fire me. I quit.
No. Yeah. So the board's like, I don't, like, there's nothing for us to do here. Okay. So we get that email, and I am just like beside myself that there is such delicious drama going on in the neighborhood and wishing that I could have more information about it. So now we have upcoming HOA board elections, and I think voting is open right now. And there's been a lot of campaigning going on the various community Facebook pages and like candidate forums.
Oh my gosh.
And all kinds of things that just baffle me from the perspective of somebody who would like never care to involve themselves in something like this. So the current board president, who voted to remove these members, is also up for re-election. And this is causing major drama because I guess these removed members have a lot of friends here, maybe. And there are people who were very upset that they were removed. So yesterday on one of our Facebook pages, as far as I know, this random guy posts, there's been a lot of back and forth on the removal of Gova and Ravine from the ARC committee. And I had a simple question that can hopefully be answered with a yes or no. And he basically goes on to ask, was there due process here? Like, were Ravine and Gova, did they, this memo that recommended their removal, like, did they have access to it? Did they have the ability to respond to it? Can the board chair respond and let us know that that was done? And then some other random person jumps in and is like, I mean, essentially says, see the memo that was sent to all of us, dummy. And he writes back. I mean, you can imagine this is going on Facebook, right? So it immediately devolves.
Yes.
And he's like, well, I wasn't really asking you. I'm asking the board president to clarify what written communication was sent to Gova and Ravine, you know, and what opportunity they had to defend themselves. And there's this back and forth between these two. And then this guy who made the original post goes, I think you were missing the point here, possibly because I'm not being clear about the ask. I apologize for the confusion, as English is one of seven languages I speak, so it may be a little rusty.
It's just, let me pause and flex here for a moment.
I on know. You. I loved that burn. That was so amazing. Then a VP of the board who apparently voted against the removals pops on and is like, well, we didn't know about, like, the board didn't know about any issues on the art committee until the chair of the committee recommended in January that these people be removed. And it says specifically the board met on February 2nd, 2024 at Tom Thumb, which is our local grocery store.
They're like huddled in the produce section.
Well, there's a little, there's like the there's tiniest, like little saddest little patio. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Out front, you know, where you could take your sandwich or whatever and go sit. So I assume they must have been like,
meet at an HEB at least, my God.
Well, it's like, there are so many nice little coffee shops. Why wouldn't you just go sit at a coffee shop? The Tom Thumb? Like, there's nothing about this that indicates professionalism, okay? So the board met at Tom Thumb to discuss the ARC and agreed to meet with the ARC members one-on-one as a team. For due process. So basically, like, well, we agreed to meet with everybody one-on-one and then again as a team for due process purposes. So this HOA board member goes on to say, well, that didn't happen. And the board president, who now is up for re-election, unilaterally decided to put a motion to remove the ARC members, which had to be voted on. So then that's how they get removed.
They're spilling the tea on inner board
workings. So much tea. I love it. And they go on. I mean, this, of course, this goes on and on. And there's somebody else who jumps in and is like, the hidden agenda is as clear as the water in my pool. And somebody else goes, I'm sorry, your pool water is as dirty as it is. The only thing dirtier is the board's handling of this issue. I am beside myself.
This is incredible.
No, I love it. And I meant to go back and check the Facebook today, but I'll keep you apprised of any developments. This is just like, this is honestly best HOA experience I've ever had witnessing this drama. Yeah, 10 out of 10. Don't harass me about the bags of mulch that have been sitting in front of my house for 4 months. Like, let's talk about this.
See, this is wonderful because our school board, world famous South Lake Carroll school board. Some of the families that helped found the political action committee that stuffed our school board full of all the representatives, have had a falling out with the rest of the political action committee. And amazing. These people are on Facebook lighting them the hell up with all of this drama and all of this tea. And it's wonderful on the one hand, but on the other hand, it's like, well, it is my children's school district. So that sucks a little. So HOA is fantastic because it's so low stakes drama. It's amazing. It's not like your children's future is going to be changed, whether you have, you know, German schmear on your bricks or not. So it's wonderful.
I've been enjoying having a not quite front row seat, but a partially obstructed seat, I would say, to it.
There was some drama a couple of years ago with my parents' HOA because everyone felt the dues were too high. But the, you know, they've lived in a gated community and the landscaping around the gates, everyone was very apoplectic that their dues were so high, but the president was approving them planting Nandina in the landscaping. And they were like, where is our money going? Nandina is the cheapest shrubbery you can get.
I just love that. Oh, that is so funny. Well, and people get so mad because,
yes,
for example, where our neighborhood is completely overrun with rabbits, but if you put up chicken wire to try and protect your plants in the front of the house, or if you try and put up any sort of like mesh wiring along your fence to keep the rabbits out, the HOA is immediately on you about that. But then you go to the, like, the entrance points of the neighborhood and the landscaping around the community center. And guess what's protecting the HOA's landscaping?
They're like, oh, we paid for these begonias. We don't want the little rabbits eating them.
I know. Well, it's like, on the one hand, I appreciate that you're protecting the investment you made with part of my money. But on the other hand, it certainly seems like what's good for the goose should be good for the gander here, you know? Anyway, that's okay. Amazing. So I had to share that with you.
Incredible. I have two little hot toppies, one of which includes a lot of play acting. But what do you have for us in terms of hot toppies or updates?
Well, I guess we should tell people we're only doing a Hot Toppies episode because I've been working on the same story for like 6 weeks now and making zero appreciable process because of everything else we've talked about.
Yes.
So what I've got is in our January 26th episode called Peeping the Scandal at Troutman Pieper, we talked about former Troutman associate Gita Sancano's lawsuit against the firm alleging racial discrimination and retaliation. She has since filed another lawsuit, this time against MLA Global, which is a fancy pants recruiting firm. So we are going to talk about that lawsuit.
Fantastic. I can't wait because I have intentionally not read about that lawsuit so that you could tell me about it.
In this lawsuit, again, it's against MLA Global, which is a large international law, like law recruiting firm that does a lot of big law recruiting. I've worked with them before in-house. And Gita alleges that she worked with two managing directors at MLA, Andy and Randy. Andy's a dude, Randy is a woman. Gita says that she first spoke with Randy shortly after Troutman fired her in late 2023. And she explained to Randy that she'd been subjected to racial discrimination at Troutman, and that Troutman fired her for complaining. And here is what the complaint says about Randy's response.
Without any basis whatsoever, and without knowing any of the relevant facts, Randy incredulously responded, "I have a lot of white clients who have been let go." Apparently, Randy, who is a lawyer and a recruiter, is of the belief that there is no such thing as discrimination because sometimes white people lose their jobs. Yikes.
So that's how we open. And Gita alleges that Randy went on during this call to tell her, quote, "Whatever you do, do not file a lawsuit." They then had another call at the beginning of this year in which Gita alleges that Randy once again told her not to file a lawsuit against Troutman and that Gita would never find a job if she sued. But Randy still agreed to send Gita's materials to a law firm identified only as Law Firm A. Gita sued Troutman Pieper on January 17th, 2024. On January 18th, the next day, Randy allegedly calls up Gita and says that the position at Firm A is no longer available. But in the meantime, Firm A's recruiters have scheduled Gita to come in for a screening interview the next day. So Gita thinks this is a lie.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm willing to believe that this could have been a mix-up or... They were still willing to talk to Gita, but maybe they'd already made an offer on the position.
Yeah, exactly.
Open.
That's
Who
not
knows?
Uncommon.
Mm-hmm. But the most important part, though, is that during this call, Randy allegedly tells Gita that Randy cannot work with Gita any longer because of the lawsuit that Gita filed against Troutman. But somehow, Gita's lawyers got their hands on internal-only MLA emails.
Oh, my God. Again, like my eyes are lighting up again.
And I don't know if this was the result of discovery in the lawsuit against Troutman or maybe pre-suit discovery against MLA specifically, or if maybe we have a mole inside MLA who is like, get a load of this. The day after Gita filed her lawsuit, a director in MLA's associate practice group sent a link to the lawsuit to an internal MLA distribution group. It appears that roughly 1 minute later, Randy responded. And here's what she said.
"Ooh, I represent her and told her not to sue. Thank you for the heads up." Again, yikes.
Okay, so remember I referenced Gita was working with Randy and a guy named Andy. Okay, so Andy also pops up and hits reply all. So we're hitting the whole distribution list, by the way, which makes me think this is a mole.
Also, no good comes from reply all. Like,
no.
This is the lesson.
No. And this is what Andy has to say.
"That's Randy and my candidate, FYI. However, we won't work with her now." Good Lord.
Randy hits reply all and says,
"Agreed, period. I will call her later."
Then MLA's executive director of the Associate Practice Group for North America gets in on the reply all action, and she responds to Randy's latest email with the following.
Hi, everybody. For those of you wondering, we are not washing our hands of this candidate, but we do need to exit the paid relationship at this point due to the likelihood of being subpoenaed should this move forward. Please let me know if you want to talk about it. Thanks! Exclamation point.
Okay, discuss, what do we think about this person claiming that they need to exit their relationship with Gita because of the likelihood that they're subpoenaed in the future?
This was a very fast scramble to cover up what everyone was already saying, that they were intentionally retaliating against her for engaging in protected activity. And then they're like, no. It's because we may be subpoenaed one day.
I mean, it to me, it doesn't make sense because seems like, to use a Texanism, the barn doors are already open on that one.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you've been in discussions with her. You've submitted her materials to at least one firm. But also, if things are on the up and up, what is the issue with the fact that you might get subpoenaed?
Yeah. Like, I've worked at places that get subpoenas every day.
And right.
Subpoenas happen. That's not like, no one's like, oh my God, we may be a third party discovery in this. Like,
it's just kind of a fact of life. Yeah,
exactly.
So at some point, Gita also gets in touch with another recruiter who was a director in the associate practice group. She alleges that she calls this guy up and he said that he would, quote, he would have loved to help her because she is a first generation attorney like him, but he can't because MLA doesn't want its documents subpoenaed.
This is such a terrible line to try and use for this.
I will jump ahead and tell you how MLA responded to this lawsuit because it plays into my thoughts on this whole thing. In response to the lawsuit, MLA, of course, said that it plans to defend the matter, quote, vigorously. And straight up admitted that MLA gave Sancano, quote, our best professional advice and to convey a basic principle of our industry, that law firms may be wary of hiring someone who is suing another firm. So I assume what MLA is going to do here is basically be like, well, we don't care why she sued the firm. We don't care that it was a breach of contract or for racial discrimination or because the sky is blue and the sea is purple. We're agnostic as to the purpose or cause of the lawsuit. We simply are not going to work with any associate or attorney who has sued their law firm. I would love to see how the data bears that out. Also, I think when they're like, well, we don't want our documents subpoenaed, I suspect that the cause for that is because they know that they work with a lot of garbage human beings who, if internal and external communications with clients were exposed through discovery, we would all learn that there are firms out there who will blackball you simply for seeking to vindicate your legally protected rights.
Which is something you and I have heard the entire time we've been lawyers.
Well, we kind of talked about this offline because, and I haven't really had a chance to sort my thoughts about this, but when I was a baby attorney at the firm that we first started working at, it was just kind of in the ether that if you sue a firm, you're never going to work in this town again. And it took me a really long time before I examined that more critically to be like, well, why do we think that?
Yes.
Because associate lawsuits against law firms are incredibly rare to begin with, likely in part because of the suppressive effect of this kind of belief being out there and legitimate concerns about retaliation and blackballing. I mean, I don't want to dismiss that those concerns aren't legitimate, but we don't necessarily have data to substantiate that this is true. And people are really telling on themselves.
Yes, exactly.
When they're like, I don't care how poorly and illegally, unlawfully your previous firm treated you, the fact that you are willing to attempt to stand up for yourself and vindicate your rights through the mechanisms permitted by law means that I refuse to work with you.
Yeah. You said basically the way I was thinking about it is this view does nothing more than entrench the status quo,
mm-hmm.
because you have no mechanism to change it. And there is no incentive to change if you dissuade anyone from, again, using the mechanisms that are available to you under federal law to vindicate legal rights that you should have in the workplace.
Right. Right. So my suspicion is that the reason MLA takes this position, and this is just my opinion,
mm-hmm.
is that they are perfectly willing to take tens of thousands or millions of dollars from people and firms with discriminatory practices or inclinations,
mm-hmm.
as long as they can keep that in the dark. They're mm-hmm. fine making revenue off of law firms who would refuse to hire an associate simply because she says, I was treated in an unlawful manner and I am attempting to vindicate my legal rights.
Yeah, my opinion, I also agree. And I wouldn't be surprised by it. I mean, I was a younger associate and I was interviewing for a law firm position. I won't say where. But it was for a male partner who had 3 female associates working for him and 1 male associate. And I interviewed with them and I thought it went very well. And it was through a recruiter, and the recruiter got back to me and was like, listen, they loved you. The interview went really well, but listen, the guy already has 3 female associates working for him and they just want the energy of a guy, for this position. They don't really want another woman. And at the time, it was post 2008. And mm-hmm. so, you know, you're not in a position to really push back at that point. And
yeah,
so
I mean, for people yeah. who are maybe younger, that there mm-hmm. was an economic collapse and things were yes. pretty bad.
Things were pretty dire at that point. So I didn't push back or anything. And it really wasn't until a few years later where I thought about it again. I was like, that's really fucked up, actually.
Like, wait, that's actually totally illegal. What?
Yes, exactly. But it just happens to you. And just like you said, sometimes it's in the ether so much that you don't even stop and think critically about it because the status quo is so entrenched in that area.
And I think there are a lot of legitimate reasons for somebody to decide that they don't want to pursue legal action.
Mm-hmm.
But I would not necessarily take as a truism that it means that you are going to be blackballed forever from the practice of law.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that effectively is a myth that, to your point, entrenches and protects the structural misogyny, mm-hmm. racism, et cetera, you know, that exists in a lot of these places.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that kind of digresses, but that's what I think is at the bottom of MLA being like, oh no, we couldn't possibly have to do an email yeah. search and respond to a subpoena. Like, what? Not us. So there's another very interesting allegation in this lawsuit, which is that according to Gita's complaint, MLA uses an internal tracking tool to keep records and notes about its clients.
Mm-hmm.
She says that Randy wrote in Gita's record, quote, and she filed a discrimination lawsuit, ... end quote. Gita alleges on information and belief that this note, along with her resume, were deleted within 48 hours of MLA's receipt of Gita's litigation hold notice.
How would she know that?
That's There's got to be a mole, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
So we've got potential spoliation issues too.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Love that. Love that. And that's kind of where we are right now. MLA will have to respond. And like we said, mm-hmm. according to their public statement, they intend to defend it vigorously.
Yeah.
And I assume, I assume that they'll take the position that they are not going to work with anybody who files a lawsuit against their firm. And I would be totally fascinated to know, does that go for Rainmaker Partners too? If they get into a dispute mm-hmm. with a prior firm about originations or what they're owed after they leave, you're not going to place that partner and potentially make hundreds of thousands of dollars off that deal. That's like, is that the position? Yeah. I'm just curious, right? I mean, yeah. How far does
our little logical leap go? Exactly.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Or is it just that, you know, ultimately, what are you thinking you're going to get? Well, they said it was a some sort of paid relationship with Gita. So presumably she's paying. Whereas normally mm-hmm. when an employer is yeah. hiring, they're going to be paying the recruiter some percentage of your salary, like 20, 25%, whatever, mm-hmm. to recruit you, assuming that you're retained at the firm, right? And maybe they just look at Gita and they're like, we're not making enough money off her to make this worth it. Pass.
Yeah, exactly. Cut her to the wind at that point.
Yeah. So
interesting.
I can't wait. Yeah. Very interesting.
And hey, by the time we have our next episode, there could be material updates in the lawsuit.
Yeah, in June, we should have an answer. Who knows?
Well, thank you for that. I have two stories. Was that your final or do you have a second
that's
one?
That's it. No, that's okay. All I got.
So I have an update to our story about Cardinals owner Michael Bidwill.
By the way, I just want you to know we had talked in a previous episode about Apple's operating system doing emojis and stuff. You just had a bunch of balloons go up behind you. I have no idea why.
One of my coworkers has a new Mac and it's been doing it over and over in all of our company meetings and it's so funny. And it's just like you said, you can turn it off in the settings, but it comes back on. Like it is
automatically, and I can't figure out when because it seems to happen. I don't know if it's when you restart or what, but anyway.
Balloons for Bidwell.
All right, update on the Arizona Cardinals.
So if you remember, the COO, Terry McDonough, filed this arbitration against the Cardinals and Bidwell, the owner. If you don't remember, he filed this grievance regarding his termination. And as soon as he did, Bidwell had the team put up a press release, which is still available online, that in turn accused Bidwell of, quote, extreme domestic violence, and basically called him a deadbeat dad and said that he used his work email to discuss this alleged domestic violence against his wife. And it also called him a drunk and a liar and mentally unstable in basically those terms in the press release, which is not best practice generally when someone files a lawsuit against you.
We discussed in the original episode that this is how you get sued for defamation, and most mm-hmm. employers will avoid making statements like that for this very reason.
And lo and behold, the arbitrator dismissed McDonough's claims for wrongful termination and retaliation, but did find in his favor for defamation and awarded him a $3 million award against the Arizona Cardinals. One thing we didn't mention in the episode is that the daughter of Terry McDonough that he allegedly cut off, according to this press release, is special needs. And the Cardinals knew she was special needs and knew that he moved to Arizona specifically because it would mean it would be easier for him to support her condition and spend more time with her. So it was actually the very opposite of what they were alleging. And so just made it seem even worse, basically, to the arbitrator. Yeah. And the arbitrator had a very long decision going through basically like, this is a lie, this is a lie, this is a lie. Terry McDonough is not a man to let this slide. And we salute him for it because this week he and his family filed a defamation lawsuit against the PR firm who drafted the statement for Michael Bidwill, the Cardinals and Michael Bidwill. And so basically McDonough's wife and his daughter sued the Cardinals and Bidwill and the PR agency for the statements contained in the PR statement. And McDonough himself only sued the agency, but that was filed on I think it was filed on Monday of this week. So it is.
Everybody's going to get this
new smoke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was just removed to federal court. So it's even easier to follow at this point. So we will be keeping an eye on this. So all's well ends well for Michael Bidwill so far on this. And sometimes karma does turn around and there is actually an arbitration award that seems just and right.
Nice.
We also have my other final topic is relatively breaking news, but I told you somewhat, avoid this if you can. Have you followed the Elon Musk defamation deposition saga that has been all over the internet yesterday and today?
This just popped up on my radar.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a little bit, enough to know that it sounds like a total mess.
It is the biggest mess. So this is related to yet another defamation lawsuit that was filed against Elon Musk in October. And it was based on a fight that happened during Oregon City's first Pride Night Fest, when the Proud Boys and another white social or a white supremacist group, the Rose City Nationalists, apparently got into a brawl at this Pride Fest, and it was all over the internet. I didn't really remember this. I didn't remember this happening, but apparently these two white nationalist groups get into this brawl. And immediately the gutter dwellers and sewer dwellers on Twitter were like, this is a false flag. This is a psyop by the FBI. This didn't actually happen. There's no such thing as white nationalists. Like, these are all plants and a false flag. Elon naturally jumps in on that theory and starts quote tweeting these tweets of people, quote unquote, identifying the white nationalists involved in this brawl.
Can we take a pause here? Because
yeah,
for people, we are terminally online.
Yes.
And unfortunately, much more familiar with Elon Musk's online activities than I think any person should reasonably be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the important thing for people here to know, who only are like, oh, I don't know, he's like a billionaire who backed SpaceX and bought Tesla and turned it into this car manufacturer. My opinion, he is a white supremacist based on the things that he tweets and he retweets on Twitter. He is xenophobic. He is deeply anti-Semitic. And he is certainly a committed white nationalist. And this is not an accident. We don't need to give him the benefit of the doubt that he doesn't know what he's doing. I mean, we're willing to treat him like he's a genius when it comes to SpaceX and Tesla. But, oh, when it comes to retweeting great replacement theory stuff, we're going to give him a pass. No, we don't need to do that. He is a white nationalist. So I just wanted to put that out there because I think that most people are probably fairly casual observers that are not seeing this stuff on Twitter like you and I do because we haven't put our phones down since like 2014.
I think that's a very fair summary because he is explicitly a supporter of the Great Replacement Theory. That's his current bugaboo. And explicitly saying that the white race is going to be replaced in the United States. And that's like the goal of the Democrats. Like, he is explicitly a supporter of that. So we don't need to give him the benefit of the doubt. We know where he stands. He tells us these
and
things.
And he retweets. I mean, he retweets actual Nazi propaganda. I mean, that's how bad it is. And that's, you don't need to be a liberal to see that kind of stuff. You just need to know what the source is and what the implications are. And to not give him a pass because he's a billionaire. I mean, if anything, he should be held to higher standards because of the extreme amount of power and lack of accountability that his billionaire status gives him. So anyway, continue. I just wanted to put that out there.
No, I think that's a very fair summary and give some context to the non-terminally online people without broken brains like us. So this fight happens and all these Elon Musk, far-right, white nationalist Twitter accounts decide that this is, again, a false flag and a psyop. And so they somehow find this 22-year-old Ben Brody, who lives outside of Austin. And in his college photo under his fraternity, he says that he wants to work for the government someday. And I don't know how, but this account decides that 22-year-old Ben Brody, who lives in Austin, was one of the members of the Rose City Nationalists and an undercover federal agent who incited this brawl to make the white nationalists look bad and incite this media storm about it. Elon Musk quote tweets that to his 180 million followers and basically says, this is a brand new federal agent pretending to be a neo-Nazi in a false flag situation in this brawl. And
okay, which again, C point A, this man's brain is broken.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He obviously ruins Ben Brody and his family's life because this takes off on Twitter because Elon Musk again has 180 million followers, and Lord knows how many other people have seen this tweet. That tweet is still up on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it. It is still there under Elon Musk's profile. Brody and his family were forced to flee their home and basically go find temporary shelter because they were receiving death threats, because they were, you know, the target of the ire of all of these insane racists thinking that he is an undercover federal agent when he wasn't even in Oregon at the time. He was in Austin. Like, it literally could not have been him. Mm-hmm. So Ben Brody hires a plaintiff's attorney, and they have sued Musk for defamation. The attorney that he hired is the attorney who just successfully sued Alex Jones for defamation on behalf of the Sandy Hook families. So this guy knows his shit. He's a defamation expert. He's a legit defamation lawyer. They have what's called, basically, they have a discovery order where Elon is sitting for a limited deposition for a limited number of hours, because the Elon side, we've discussed it before, has filed basically an anti-slap response to this defamation lawsuit. And so the judge said, listen, you can have Elon sit for a two-hour deposition to address these issues that arose in the anti-slap motion so that we have more information about them. Go for it. Yes.
You have talked about anti-slap motions before, but let's do a refresher because I feel like that's a pretty niche topic that most people are not familiar with.
Yeah. So when you sue someone for defamation, one, in many states, one potential defense to defamation is what's called an anti-slap motion. And it is to prevent lawsuits, defamation lawsuits that are filed to shut up critics, essentially. So say you are criticizing a politician and that politician turns around and sues you for defamation. You would have file what's called an anti-slap motion, which stands for strategic litigation against public participation, which basically says, this is my First Amendment right to say this. You are trying to prevent me from saying something that's in the public interest. And when you file that, the court has very strict timelines on when it must decide the motion. And if it dismisses the case as a result of finding that it was this strategic litigation against public participation, it is required to reward attorney's fees to the defendant. So it's a way to protect defamation defendants from lawsuits that are filed as a nuisance or to shut up critics, as opposed to legitimate defamation lawsuits against someone who is actually defaming you.
It makes the defamation plaintiff have some skin in the game by saying, exactly, if you got this wrong, you're on the hook for attorney's fees.
Exactly. Now, they have ordered this deposition of Elon Musk. This occurs on March 27th, I believe, so very recently. And Musk sits for his deposition. The deposition is a Zoom deposition, but it occurs in Texas. Musk is in Texas. The plaintiff's lawyer is in Texas. So, KP, guess who shows up to defend the deposition on behalf of Elon Musk?
Let me ask you some questions. Mm-hmm. This lawsuit takes place in the state of Texas, yes?
Yes.
Okay. The lawyer who shows up to defend the deposition on behalf of Elon Musk, is he licensed in the state of Texas?
See, you ruined the fun because no, he's not. And I was going to surprise you with it.
Well, I already knew. Sorry.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. When you are an out-of-state lawyer and you would like to participate in litigation in another state, one of the things you can do is petition the court to grant you admission, what we call pro hoc vice, which is basically like, you can come and do this case and be subject to our rules, et cetera, without getting licensed in the state. Was Elon Musk's attorney who showed up admitted pro hoc vice in this case?
Absolutely not.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner. Welcome, Alex Spiro.
Exactly.
Or Spiro.
It's
I don't
Alex
know how we
Spiro
pronounce his
or Spiro.
Name.
Yeah. I don't know how to pronounce his name either. I don't care enough to figure it out.
I don't. Yeah, whatever. Irrelevant. None of my business.
So I sent you a ton of little snippets over email. And the first is labeled Snippet A. And that is the, I'm going to spoiler alert this, that is the intro to the motion for sanctions that was filed yesterday against Alex Spiro for his participation and his actions during this deposition of Elon Musk.
Would you like me to read this?
Yes, please read A.
Out-of-state attorneys can do nothing more unless they are admitted pro hoc vice. Here, Spiro committed unauthorized practice of law in three ways. One, he prepared and signed pleadings. Two, he showed up unannounced to defend and disrupt Musk's deposition. And three, he drafted and served subsequent legal demands on the plaintiff.
Thoughts on would you do that if you were not licensed in said state?
Nope.
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 I mean, that's pretty black letter law on what you can and can't do. Like, sometimes there's some gray areas on what constitutes unlicensed practice of law. This is not one of them. This is about as clear as it gets.
You don't walk into a deposition like, I am not licensed anywhere within 1,000-mile radius, but I don't care.
Yes. And you don't sign pleadings either. Again, like, that's pretty basic in terms of what you can and can't do. You don't sign state court pleadings if you're not licensed in that state.
Or even it says, you know, he drafted and served subsequent legal demands on the plaintiff. I mean, mm-hmm. This is all totally fact-based. And I love occasionally you go to Facebook groups and somebody's like, you know, I have this ethical conundrum, blah, blah, blah. Can I do this? And it's like, I don't know. Have you bothered to read your rules yet? Have you bothered mm-hmm. to read the rules in the other state? And there was a case, I think it was in Minnesota, where the Minnesota State Supreme Court found unlicensed practice of law where this guy in Colorado was, this attorney in Colorado was representing a Minnesota couple related to a Minnesota matter. And I think they were in-laws or something, but the Minnesota State Supreme Court was like, dude, you can't be doing this. And I mean, there are other courts who disagree with that. I mean, it all comes down to the rules, but like, you know, this is stuff to be cautious about. And exactly. That apparently is just not something that Mr. Spiro is going to be cautious about.
When you're Alex Spiro, apparently you don't need to be cautious about that.
Yeah.
So the next snippet I sent you was the very first paragraph in this motion that gives us a little insight into how this 2-hour deposition went. So can you read that for us, please?
Out of state attorney, which I love, as if that's yes. like a smear on his reputation already. Unlicensed by the state of Texas. Okay, quote, out-of-state attorney Alex Spiro brazenly engaged in unauthorized practice of law by signing and preparing Musk's pleadings, showing up unannounced to defend Musk's deposition with no authority to practice law in Texas, and drafting and serving subsequent legal demands to plaintiff. Even worse, Spiro's behavior in deposition was astonishingly unprofessional as he continually interrupted the deposition with commentary, gave numerous improper instructions not to answer, berated opposing counsel, insulted plaintiff's claims, mocked counsel's questions, and generally acted in the most obnoxious manner one could contemplate without crossing into parody. In doing so, he irreparably disrupted the deposition, prevented relevant questioning related to plaintiff's TCPA response, which is the anti-slap statute, mm-hmm. and demonstrated his disrespect for the sanctity of these proceedings.
I always love when you end this with, and he throws dishonor upon this court. Like the judge is really going to buy into it now.
This beloved profession.
Yes.
How dare he?
So little snippet C is literally the first lines in the deposition, and this is how it started. So I will be the plaintiff's attorney, Bankston, and I will change my voice and also be Elon Musk because he's barely in it. But you can
You're
be Alex
change
Spiro.
Your voice. Okay. Yes. God.
I contain multitudes, KP. I can do this.
This is the start of your comedy career. Okay.
Hi, Mr. Musk. Can you hear me okay? I can. Okay. Did you?
Listen, this is a paragon of masculinity we're discussing.
Yes, exactly.
You're like, I can.
Okay, do you think you did anything wrong to Ben Brody?
Okay, this isn't a question you're allowed to ask by the court, so we're not going to do this, Mark, or this deposition is going to be over before it starts. Did we clarify that I'm Spiro?
You're Spiro, correct.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
I'm asking about his state of mind.
No.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not going to ask. You're not going to ask questions like that. It doesn't have...
I'm going to ask.
No, you're not. Or you can go see the judge.
Yeah. We are, 22 lines into the deposition transcript and we've already got...
God.
You can go see the judge.
I would rather beat my head against a wall. Okay.
This is, and I had it in my notes for a little bit later through these snippets. This is, I cannot imagine how many times this plaintiff's lawyer was like, Jesus fucking Christ. I cannot imagine because it just gets worse and worse and worse. Snippet D is my favorite little back and forth. So again, you're Alex Spiro and I'm the plaintiff's attorney.
You didn't ask if he committed actual malice, obviously.
I didn't. I asked something that was very relevant to that. I'd like to get him talking about things that he did wrong.
But that's the point. That's not what you're allowed to do in this deposition. You can't just get him talking.
I disagree, which is, again, that is what a deposition is.
Right.
It's getting the witness talking.
Right. And if you're skilled at it, they will get talking.
Yeah, exactly. In the next one, he gets into the most tedious back and forth that I may have ever seen in a deposition transcript.
Oh, great. Let's read it.
All right. You're Alex Spiro.
Listen, if you want to go back and forth with me and waste your time, you can. Go on to your next question.
Oh, we're going to get more time if you keep doing this.
No, you're not. No, you're not. Go to the judge.
You're violating Rule 199. You're not even pro hoc admitted.
Okay. You're just giving speeches that nobody's listening to but you. You're just doing them for yourself.
Oh, they're for the record, Mr. Spiro. They're for the court to listen to. This is so painful to even read. I just can't imagine what this was like.
I also can't imagine my opposing counsel telling me that I had failed to get myself admitted pro hoc vice.
And just letting that roll. Yeah.
Not like immediately leaving the jurisdiction. That's crazy. Yeah.
It's crazy. Our next little snippet. Again, you are Spiro.
I'm going to interrupt again. And I don't really care that rule you keep reading because it has nothing to do with.
I know you don't care.
Good.
By the way, all of these came from the transcript of the deposition, but were also all then pasted into the motion for sanctions against Spiro, because they're such good little snippets for sanctions.
We love a screenshot.
Okay, next one. This is very much, Mr. Spiro, I don't know if you were listening to me. This is what he posted on the day of the brawl, and this case is about whether the brawl was being accused to be a psyop. This is absolutely relevant to his state of mind on when he calls this brawl a psyop. I'm really, Mr. Spiro, I really have to ask you to please get yourself up to speed on the facts of this case. I'm definitely going to ask him.
Again, this isn't a real, you keep lecturing me, like, get up to speed on the facts of this case. This isn't like a real case. This is just some stupid.
Mr. Spiro.
Yeah, so.
Mr. Spiro.
Yeah, so.
Lawyers do not, it's not in accordance with the lawyer's creed to just start making random statements about the alleged frivolity of a case to another lawyer in a deposition. You know that's not proper. You know that.
Do you give these lectures at all your depositions?
I do, and you can watch them, which made me laugh because that is him, I think, referring to all of the Alex Jones depositions. And it is very much like scoreboard. Next exchange, I think, is just chef's kiss. Is the font too small for you? I see you get like an itch from the computer monitor.
I know, I'm trying to read this.
Sorry.
All right, I'm Mr. Spiro again. Now, to the four deposition topics, we're on, I guess, topic four. We've addressed 1 through 3. How is this relevant to 4?
Because in Gonzalez versus Hearst Corporation, a refusal to print a retraction is evidence of an action after the publication, but it can lend support to a claim that reckless disregard or knowledge existed at the time of the publication. Similarly, in New Times v. Isaacs, a Texas Supreme Court case, refusal to retract an exposed error tends to support a finding of actual malice, and conversely, a readiness to retract tends to negate actual malice. So again, I'll pose my questions.
Yeah, I'll look at those cases, but he's not answering that right now. I don't see the relevance. I don't think those cases, I'm pretty confident those cases are not directly on point. So I'll review the cases so we can respond further.
All right. Next time, I'd appreciate it if you showed up to a deposition with a Texas lawyer who had an understanding of Texas law of actual malice.
And you skipped over it in your reading, but he gives the citation for the cases in these quotes. He's like, 930 Southwest 2nd, 275. Yeah.
Yeah. Which was, I was like, did he have that written down or did he know that by memory?
I bet he knows it by memory.
Yeah. I mean, the guy knows his stuff. We would be here for hours if we just focused on Alex Spiro, but shockingly, Elon Musk was also shitty too in the deposition. So I will again be Bankston and Elon. Well, no, I take that back. You can be Elon.
Okay.
And I will be Bankston, and I will also be Spiro in this because he shows up a couple times as well. Okay. So I will change my voice to what I believe Alex Spiro's voice sounds like. Okay, Mr. Musk, did you think you did anything wrong to Ben Brody? Did anything wrong to Ben Brody? Okay, you can ask the question.
I don't know Ben Brody.
You're aware Ben Brody is somebody who sued you, right?
I think you're the one suing.
Actually, Mr. Musk, I'm an attorney. Did you know that? I'm an attorney representing Mr. Brody.
Okay, and I can't do that voice anymore. Musk says, yes, but many times I found that the actual plaintiff is the attorney.
Okay, but that's just an assumption you're making, right? Like, you don't know anything about Ben Brody?
I don't.
Okay, you understand Ben Brody has filed a lawsuit against you.
In my opinion, you're the one filing the lawsuit.
You understand that there's a piece of paper on which there's a lawsuit written. And at the top of that lawsuit, it says Ben Brody, plaintiff versus Elon Musk, defendant. Do you understand that?
I understand that, but I view many cases, and probably this one too, that the real plaintiff is the lawyer seeking money like you.
Okay, I'd like to know though, are you aware that there's a piece of paper that has a lawsuit on it that says Ben Brody versus Elon Musk? That's actually what I'm wanting to know.
Yes.
Okay.
Technically.
Do you feel like you have an understanding of what the lawsuit alleges you did wrong?
I have a limited understanding of that, of what the lawsuit is about.
Just exhausting in every way, shape, or form. Stupid. And it shows that Elon has these brain worms that thinks he's absolutely brilliant. And it's just the most contrived, stereotypical beliefs that he thinks that makes him brilliant.
Well, in this accusation that lawyers are using plaintiffs strategically to file mm-hmm. lawsuits, as if Elon Musk doesn't do the same thing.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Next one. I am the plaintiff's attorney and you'll be Elon. Okay, so let's go back to the question that we had, which was now that you've acquired the company, Twitter is no longer getting a free benefit. And that means a free benefit of him posting and creating content. I mean, this benefits you as well, your engagement that you create for the company. Is that correct?
Not necessarily. So I believe my posting has really remained unchanged before and after the acquisition. And going back to the sort of self-inflicted wounds, the Kevlar shoes, I think I may have done more to financially impair the company than to help it, but certainly I do not guide my posts by what is financially beneficial, but what I believe is interesting or important or entertaining to the public.
Which is an interesting admission to make, one, as someone who acquired the company, and two, as someone who has a fiduciary duty to act in the company's best interest. And he's like, yeah, fuck that. I don't do that. I tweet what's interesting. Finally, like I said, we could go on for hours, but we get this answer from Elon that will be Exhibit A in everything that the plaintiff files from now on. So I will be, again, both lawyers, and I'll be asking as the plaintiff's lawyer. Do you think you owed it to Ben Brody to be as accurate as you could? And Spiro goes, objection. And then Elon answers.
I aspire to be accurate no matter who the person is. Just as a casual observer, I can tell you that's completely false.
Yes.
Like, Elon Musk does not care one bit about whether what he is tweeting or retweeting has any accuracy whatsoever.
Do you think you lived up to the duty to Ben Brody, or do you think that you failed him?
I don't think he has been meaningfully harmed by this.
This is the kid who had to flee his home. Yes.
Right. Interesting way of answering that question.
So we are at the point where the motion for sanctions was filed. I'm sure we will be getting a response. Musk has had two Texas lawyers representing him in this lawsuit. They are the ones that argued the anti-slap motion to the judge. So that's why it's extra interesting that Alex Spiro is the one who showed up to the deposition and not one of the actual Texas licensed lawyers. Mm-hmm. So we will see how the judge evaluates this. Like, I don't expect that Alex Spiro is going to get like the ban hammer or something like that. And it's going to be like, you can never practice law again. This is going to be like, oh, you get to depose Elon for another hour and Alex cannot be admitted pro hoc vice in this case. It's going to be something like that.
Yeah, and maybe paying attorney's fees.
Yeah, exactly. Reimbursing attorney's fees.
And all this kind of stuff, yeah.
So there's no vengeance, retribution that's going to happen here. But at the same time, it did lift the curtain yet again on what a moron Elon is. And the people he keeps in his employ that just think that the rules don't apply to them.
Yeah, what's totally fascinating to me is that Alex Spiro is a partner at Quinn Emanuel, which is mm-hmm. generally regarded as a very prestigious litigation firm.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody needs to explain to me how we've got a Quinn partner who can't be bothered to get himself admitted pro hac vice in his client's litigation cases. And I saw something on Twitter where somebody had investigated, I believe, a number of his cases mm-hmm. where he was not licensed, where he failed to file his pro hac vice papers. So that's interesting.
But I mean, what has ever happened to him as a result of that? Nothing so far, basically.
Well, it's probably the problem. He's probably been coasting on the reputation of his clients as mm-hmm. famous or powerful, or Quinn Emanuel's reputation. You know,
I mean, Eric Adams just hired him as his lawyer to defend him against sexual harassment claims that were filed against him as the mayor of New York. I mean, he's not hurting for money. He's now, and again, that's just so typical of who would hire him as their defense attorney. So we will see. But yeah, it's just like you said, he's had no incentive to ever come into compliance because what has ever happened as a result of him not doing so? So we'll see.
Yeah. And I mean, any monetary penalty from the court is probably going to be insignificant compared to mm-hmm. what his yearly comp is, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, so what if he has to pay like a $5,000 fine?
Yeah, that's
so,
exactly
so
right.
So what if he can't show up and litigate in this case in particular? Like, they probably have somebody else who's licensed in Texas who can come show up for the case while he kind of drives from the office.
I was about to say, he's just going to direct from the background anyway. Right. It's not like there's no earth-shattering thing that's going to happen here other than Ben Brody will probably get reimbursed the fees that he would have spent on his lawyers all of this.
To me, this is just another example about how there are rules that apply to some of us and mm-hmm. others just don't need to worry about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean,
so on that happy note.
Yeah, exactly. Would you do this? Never. Would I do this?
No.
Absolutely never. Because we'd lose our license.
Yeah, or because I don't have millions of dollars in the bank mm-hmm. to be paying fees or arguing over stupid motions, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. So anyway, great. Well, cool. I hope there's more stupid transcripts that come out of this.
Exactly. I have no doubt there will be. So we will keep an eye on those. And on that note, I do have an episode I've been working on that is almost finished. So whenever we actually get a chance to record again, we could have an episode. So we will see when that will be, though, because life is insane right now for both of us. So hang tight with us. We're not going anywhere. We're just really, really busy.
Yeah, we tried to record yesterday and then I was like, wait, we can't do this right now. I have our housekeeper, a structural engineer, HVAC, and a roof guy at my house. Yes. So we will be back at some point mm-hmm. and hopefully I will be blissfully settled across the country.
Exactly. Womp womp. So.
Well, I know. Yeah, no, you say that, but you're going to be laughing your ass off in December when it's like 70 degrees here in Texas and I'm microdosing hypothermia.
You're like, you can't feel your fingers, but I can vote. So there's that.
You can vote. I will temporarily, until a Republican majority enacts a federal law banning abortion, I will mm-hmm. have abortion rights again, which is super exciting. All sorts of good stuff to come from this move.
Boy, you're going to be a full legal person. Tell me what it's like.
I'm so excited to find out about this.
Yeah. So anyway, right. Thanks, guys.
There is a link for merch in the bio. If you would like to send us tips, you can do so at badlawyerpod@gmail.com. And of course, we are on most of the social media platforms as Bad Lawyer Pod. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, guys.